Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the Penn State collective serving 31 sports and over 800 student athletes at Penn State. I am Jim Galante, along with Mike Villagrana from Happy Valley United, and our special guest today is Andy Frank, General Manager of Personnel and Recruitment at Penn State. Andy, welcome to the show.
Jim, appreciate you having me.
Oh, fantastic to have you. And Andy, whenever we introduce someone new to the show, we give their job title. We got to get, all right, what does the General Manager of Personnel and Recruitment do?
Yeah, it's every day is a different day. Sometimes you come to work and think that you have your list of things you're going to get done, and it changes quickly on you. I think as a starting point, oversee our recruiting operations, our recruiting department as a football program. Obviously, it's changed a bunch over the years. Back when I first got started in a role similar to this, it was, you know, planning events and planning visits for kids. It was evaluating a lot of film, putting together recruiting boards, planning travel for coaches, all of those type of things. As time has gone on, probably a little bit less involved in the details of all of those different things, but still involved somewhat in all of them. And then obviously now with revenue sharing, the money piece comes involved, where now it's balancing a budget, if you will, in terms of how much we're going to be able to spend on our roster, and being able to figure out what the best ways are to, you know, allocate our resources and figure out the best way to build a roster and construct a roster.
From the outside looking in, fans now are comparing being the GM in college. It's very similar to the general manager job of an NFL team now, is it not?
Yeah, in some ways it is. Obviously, there's some ways that it's very different. And I would say that every college football program is going to do it a little bit differently, and we're all adapting to the changes. In some cases in the NFL, you know, the GM is making the final decision on every roster move, and the head coach or the coaches have little to no say in it. That's not really kind of the way it is in college. The coaches are still very much involved in who the players are that we bring in, and they should be. I think it's the way to build the best organization. I would probably argue that most of the NFL teams that have a good relationship with the front office and the coaches probably are the most successful. And so we're trying to do it, you know, very similar to that, where, you know, our recruiting personnel are doing a lot of evaluations, and they're, you know, collaborating with the coaches and making sure that we're all on the same page. You know, we want to recruit kids and we want to sign kids that everybody feels good about, not that just, hey, one person, it's their favorite recruit. No, it's someone that we're all on board with and we all think is going to be successful here at Penn State.
Like Bill Parcells said, if I'm cooking the dinner, or I want a hand in buying the groceries. Now, Andy, you've been with James Franklin from the start here at Penn State. Mike, you were here early on. You came back. You worked directly with Andy when you were here the first time, right, Mike? What was that like?
Yes, sir. It was. I've talked to you about this before. It was really eye-opening for me because I was coming from a different space. I was coaching, and then I came into this, just kind of getting my foot in the door and working directly under Andy and Coach Franklin was eye-opening for me. They kind of set a standard when it comes to execution and detail and how you treat people and stuff like that. So everywhere I've gone, I've kind of carried that standard with me, you know, always thinking in the back of my head, well, man, Andy would probably, he'd probably detail this thing up and make it look like a school paper and like all the different details. And he talks about when I got here, he was still doing a lot of the planning. So I kind of got to see that, how to plan an event, plan an official visit, junior day, stuff like that, and the detail that goes into it. And that was just really helpful, and just carried that on with my career. Now I'm back in a different space, but still there's that standard.
Andy, you know, Mike talks about learning from you, kind of that whole process. How about yourself? How does one go to, I'll call it the front office, again, you're the title of GM. How did you progress from, now you played football back in Princeton with our old buddy Ross Tucker, right?
I did, yeah. He was a much better player than I was. I'll have to give him credit for that. But yeah, I played college ball at Princeton. After I graduated, I ended up going back home working for a civil engineering firm in Michigan for 4 years. While I was doing that, the entire time I was coaching high school football, and did that and loved that. And that was something that was a passion of mine. And was fortunate enough after four seasons and 4 years of doing that to get a GA position at Vanderbilt. Did that for 3 years, was an on-the-field GA. Started out with the D-line. That was not my cup of tea, but moved to the DBs, which is where I felt much more comfortable. Did that for a couple years. And then after that was done, it's actually a kind of a window of time where they had created a job for me, an off-the-field job for me, that it wasn't going to start for, I can't remember, it was 3-4 months, something along those lines. So I was kind of working for free at the time. Did a pretty expansive recruiting study on kind of how we were, you know, recruiting at the time and how we were allocating our resources in terms of man hours and things along those lines. And the job that was going to kind of be a combination of an operations and recruiting role, after having done that kind of work, kind of turned fully into a recruiting role. It was really Vanderbilt's first off-field recruiting director, whatever you want to call it. I don't hear my title, assistant director of operation at the time, whatever it was then. And did that. And then kind of as time has gone, titles have changed over the years. So I started out in a department of one plus an administrative assistant who helped us a ton in recruiting back then. To now we're a department of 12 to 14, depending on how you want to count it. And so, you know, it's kind of a trial by fire. You learned how to, you know, at first do everything. And then as time went on, how to hopefully delegate things to other people and, you know, hire good people that, you know, can kind of make up for your weaknesses in it. Cause we can't all do everything to the highest level. So we've got a lot of good people that kind of are able to, play on their strengths and hopefully make the overall department as strong as it possibly can be.
Now, you came to Penn State then with James Franklin. You're still with him. How was that? How were things recruiting in the beginning? We all know as Penn Staters what you walked into as a staff here at Penn State. It certainly wasn't at the same high point that it is right now. How did you overcome those, I think, hurdles with recruiting back then, as compared to now? You walk in the door, you can talk about a history of great running backs, great tight ends, great defensive ends. You have that to present. Didn't really have that 10 years ago.
Yeah, it's changed a bunch. I think at the core of what it takes to be successful in recruiting, it's hasn't changed that much. It's still about relationships. It's still about putting the work in, identifying players, and then spending the time to get to know them and make sure they understand what we're all about. You know, early on, you know, there were some challenges there. Now, a positive that we had early on, when we first got here, things timed up fairly well for us in the sense that we had a really good recruiting class that was committed to us at Vanderbilt at the time. And Penn State had a really good recruiting class that was committed here under Bill O'Brien. And that first recruiting class, it might not have been as highly rated as some, but we were able to merge kind of those two classes together and get a lot of really, really productive players out of that group. So that first recruiting class, I think, really set, again, not from a ranking standpoint per se, but from the player standpoint, we got a lot of good players out of that class. And then, you know, we kind of had to adjust and figure out, you know, what we were recruiting to here at Penn State, what were going to be the things that were going to work for us. Where do we want to recruit? How do we want to recruit those areas? And then as we built on the success on the field, obviously became more attractive to more prospects, whether it's in this region or it's, you know, across the country, being able to see, you know, the fact that, you know, there's been before, you know, we've had the success here, people have been able to see that and been able to say, hey, I want to go do the same thing that Saquon Barkley's done, or a Mike Gesicki, or whoever the guys have been before, and be able to say that we can help you develop into the person you want to be, and then hopefully the NFL player that you want to be.
Now, Mike, you were part of that recruiting group back then. Any fun recruiting stories?
Yeah, there's a ton of them that we can probably talk about off air. It was definitely a little bit different, like Andy alluded to, just because we didn't have as many people. We had to, wear a couple more hats than guys do now, which is beneficial because they're able to maximize what they're really good at. It was a really good experience because you had to do everything pretty much, which now there's pretty much like a person dedicated to everything that we did back then now. It's a lot different.
And Andy, you were talking about having your Vanderbilt recruiting class and the Penn State recruiting class that kind of merged. One of the names that gets talked about a lot is like Trace McSorley at the time. Was he going to be a defensive back, which is how a lot of teams, I guess, recruited him? Was he being recruited to Vanderbilt? Were you guys the ones who said, yes, this is a quarterback?
We did, yeah. Back at the time, we originally were probably like a lot of others. Hey, you can come here as a defensive back, but we're going to come and see you throw. And we did. We went and saw him throw live. And then after seeing him throw live, we made the decision that we were going to recruit him as our quarterback. And he was committed to us at the time at Vanderbilt to be a quarterback in that class. And then when we got the job here, and coach made calls to a bunch of those guys. I think he came on a visit a week later and shortly committed after that. So it was a quick turnaround. And there was a bunch of other guys, Grant Haley's, Torrance Brown was a GA force here recently. He wasn't in that Vanderbilt class, but somebody recruited heavily there. Christian Campbell. I'm missing some guys, but that there was a number of guys that were either part of that Vanderbilt class, or were about to be a part of that Vanderbilt class that ended up, coming to Penn State when Coach got the job here. And then, like I said earlier, the class that was committed here had some really good players in it too.
Well, it's interesting to think back in a different history, in a different universe, that Trace McSorley to Penn State sure made a difference in the Nittany Lion history. All right, when we come back, Andy, I'm going to shift gears. You and I had talked about this before. The House settlement really changes things for collegiate football. The decision finally was settled. It was finalized. When we come back, I got a ton of questions about that settlement. How's it going to change things? What are the rules in there? Are there things that the common fan doesn't realize? And how about some unintended consequences of it? We'll do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the Penn State Collective. With me are my guests today, Mike Villagrana from Happy Valley United and Andy Frank, general manager of the Penn State football team. Andy, House settlement, it seemed to take forever, but it has finally been finalized just about a week or so ago. And first off, Andy, how about just a little background on it? How did we get there to the House settlement?
Yeah, I mean, it starts back with, I think, an Arizona State swimmer, Grant House, basically filing a lawsuit that turned into a class action lawsuit against the NCAA and then also the Power Five conferences. A lot of kind of negotiations back and forth. Obviously, we weren't involved in the details of those, but kind of followed it as time went on. the settlement kind of got preliminary approval back in October, I believe. So we've been planning as if this was going to happen and it was going to be finalized for a long time now. Still trying to work through the details because we're getting information now coming out of the final settlement that's going to help inform how we have to operate. But from the global standpoint, we kind of knew this was coming. So we've been planning this way as we were having conversations with our guys that, you know, we were fortunate enough to get to return to our roster and then also bring in new players in. So it essentially allows schools to share revenue with players and student athletes. And it's for their kind of their media rights, the ability to use their name, you know, likeness and image, name, image, and likeness in basically things that we do. And that was essentially what the lawsuit was. Hey, you know, I'm playing a sport here. The school is using my name, but I'm not getting any benefits of that from a financial perspective. And so now we're able to, schools will have the ability to up to $20.5 million in the first year, share that with athletes across all of their sports. And so that's kind of what we've been working through is how do we allocate those resources? What do we need to do to hopefully build the best roster and then implement that across, you know, all of our sports, which obviously for us is football that we're concerned with.
All right, Andy, they fell on that $20.5 million per program. By program, I mean per university. So Penn State will have up to that amount to share. That number, though, is a calculation, right, of some of the media contracts. So it's a percentage, so it'll change over the years?
Yeah, essentially the lawyers from both sides came up with a formula that they wanted to use that they felt was fair to both sides, essentially saying, I think it's right around 22% of revenue as it relates to the TV deals, tickets, and a couple other things that were kind of the primary revenues for athletic departments. So as time goes on, if the revenues go up, so will that cap, if you will. And that 22% was of the average of the Power Five conferences. So there could be conferences that are, you know, 22% is higher than that, but still the cap still ends up being $20.5 million at this point. And then we'll stay at that 22% as time goes on, as revenues go up.
And there's no requirement for the schools to have to spend that. They could spend up to that, spend none of it, or anything in between. That's up to each university, correct?
That is correct. Yep. Each university has that choice. Obviously, for the bigger schools, we're in a position where we're going to be able to do that and spend all $20.5 million on our student athletes across all of our sports. And so not every school will be able to do that. We'll be in, there'll be probably a good number that will, but it won't be everybody.
So now the first question is, how does that money get distributed among the sports? Because that covers the entire 31 sports at Penn State. I'm assuming that comes from Pat Kraft on down, how that would get distributed among the different sports.
Yeah, absolutely. So Pat Kraft and his team will allocate to the different sports as they see fit. We've been given, you know, kind of where we're going to be at from a football perspective. We haven't put it out publicly, and I don't think we're planning to do that anytime soon. So I won't talk about the specific numbers. But yeah, we have a number that we'll be able to allocate to our players. That comes from Pat as far as how to divvy that up amongst the different sports. But you know, we feel like we're going to be in a really good position going forward. There will still be a lot of effort in terms of raising money, raising the ability to more sponsorships, whether that's through our multimedia rights partner Playfly, whether that's through Happy Valley United and the Collective. All of those things will still matter a lot in the future as we move forward. But there will be that standard number coming from the school that we're able to do.
And Mike, why don't you kick in here? Because this doesn't mean the end of NIL, end of Collective. That's still going to be part of the equation, is it not?
Yeah, correct. And it's a big, you know, it's a big advantage if you have a strong Collective on top of the rep share. But we're going to be focusing, like we've talked about, with events, memberships, content, merchandise, sponsorships, event sponsorships, corporate sponsorships, stuff like that. to help to add to the bucket.
So, and then Mike, how does that money that goes through the collective, how does that make its way to the players?
Well, it all goes under the same bucket. Okay. And then we distribute it monthly to the players.
Gotcha. Now, Andy, you mentioned you're not going to give us like the exact figures of what goes to football, which is fine. But now within the football program, after Pat Kraft says, okay, here's your cut of the pie, you now have to split your section of the pie among the players. Again, not looking for the salaries of each player, but what are the parameters that you're going to use to decide how that money gets distributed among players?
Yeah, I think you'll see different programs do things differently. Whether or not it gets public or not, it's a different story, but everybody's gonna have to make a decision on what their philosophy is gonna be on how they allocate resources. You may see some programs that make, you know, splashy decisions from a recruiting perspective, whether it's the high school ranks or the college or the transfer portal. For us, we've tried to reward the guys that have been here. And that's been attractive even on the recruiting trail. We've found that the people that fit us best are people that understand, hey, you're going to earn what you ultimately get. It doesn't mean that we're not going to have, you know, good packages for kids coming out of high school, because we're going to. But we're not necessarily going to be the highest bidder for every single kid, because you really truly can't be. That's not realistic. But you want to be within the market of where they could be at another school, while them and their family knowing, hey, if I come up to Penn State and I perform the way that I think I'm going to, that we're going to have resources available as they get further in their career to be able to pay them even more. And I think that's something that we've seen is, as we look at it, we were able to, this past year, to be able to bring back a lot of really, really good players. And obviously our culture is a big part of that. I think the way they've been developed helps us in trying to convince those kids to come back. The coaching they're getting, you know, how happy they are here. But money is also a part of it. And having, you know, if you pay too much money on the front end, you're not going to have the money available on the back end to reward the guys that have shown it and proven it on the field, and that have already invested that time and that, you know, that blood, sweat, and tears into the program and have been productive. We want to make sure that we're able to be in a position that when the time comes that we're able to reward them financially. And we were able to do that this year. And we'll continue to structure things where that's the case. And we've got to find kids coming out of high school that appeals to them, that they don't want to come into a locker room where all of a sudden I'm the freshman because, you know, I was in the market at that time. I'm making more than somebody who's done a whole lot more for the program than I have, because the kid that can think long-term realizes, well, wait a second, if I'm that kid coming in 2 years from now, will there be a kid doing the same thing to me coming out of high school when I'm the guy that's playing? And so I think that's been important for us in the recruiting process, and really has been successful for us in having families understand that, hey, it might not be the top of the market dollar amount right now, but when it's all said and done, you're going to be taken care of. And when you produce on the field and you're the type of student and person that we want you to be here, you're going to be rewarded for it. And then ultimately it's going to help you reach your goals. You're picking the place that these are very short-term decisions in terms of, if you make a decision based on money over a 1 year, 3 year period, what's going to allow you to be successful over the next 40 years. I think those are the kids and the families that we have the most success with that are thinking about that way long-term.
Andy, the last couple of years, we saw national championships from Michigan and Ohio State, and it feels like retention of the talent was the differentiator. Those teams, those last 2 years who won national championships, that was a big deal. That looks like the formula for this Penn State team this year.
Yeah, we hope so. We definitely, you know, put an effort forward to make sure we kept our best players here. We've always been fortunate in the sense that we haven't lost a ton of guys to the transfer portal, but we were able to, you know, even the NFL draft probably, you know, make it so kids that should return to school were able to feel like it was a good decision, and not feel like they were passing up the money. To allow them to come back, make some money here, and in a lot of cases, really good money here, while also putting themselves in a better position for next year's draft to have, you know, even further long-term success.
Well, that's an interesting concept. And James Franklin has talked about this for years, even prior to NIL money coming, having a conversation with the player, an honest conversation between the pros and cons of sticking around another year or moving on to the NFL. Abdul Carter was going to be a high draft pick. I mean, that was just no-brainer decision for him. But how's that conversation go with the other players who might be looking at being a third, fourth, fifth, sixth round pick?
Yeah, it's an interesting process. I think we've, as time has gone on, we've kind of refined how we've done it. And I think it's been successful for us pre, you know, NIL, and now hopefully even more so post NIL. What we do, Coach Losey and myself will sit down with scouts and NFL teams and kind of get grades from a number of teams. Five plus teams will get grades from where they think each of our guys would get drafted if they were to enter the draft in that cycle. And then we'll sit down with the families, myself, Coach Losey, Coach Franklin, of course, the position coach. We'll sit down with the players and their families, and we'll present the information. Hey, this is what we've gotten back from the NFL teams. We will show what our track record has been. And when I say it's our track record, it's really the teams, the information they've given us, and show it to the families and allow them to see, you know, what other people are thinking of them and where they're going to be stacked up in the draft.
Get them to make an informed decision. All right, we're only halfway through. Lots more to go with Mike Villagrano and Andy Frank.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United. I'm Jim Galante, along with Mike Villagrana, Executive Director at Happy Valley United, and Andy Frank, our special guest, General Manager of the Penn State Football Nittany Lions. Andy, when I cut you off there at the end, we were talking about the decision that players have to make. Do you go to the NFL, do you declare for the draft or not? And a few years ago, James Franklin always talked about having that discussion with players and their families. Was it the best thing to go or not? But years back, the gamble that you were always taking by coming back was, no, there's no money in coming back to college. There's at least the potential for money if you get drafted. That equation has changed a bit now with NIL. And we saw it this past year or this upcoming year with this Penn State football team. So many really good players chose to come back. And I'm sure there's a lot of other reasons for it. But the fact that they can be compensated and coming back to school had to be part of that decision.
Yeah, I think it definitely is. It's helpful because, like you said, in the past, there wasn't potentially money on the college side of things. So they were having to make a decision between no money on the college side or the prospect of money on the NFL side. And so what we'll do, we've kind of always done it this way. It's changed a little bit now with the money piece, but we'll give them the draft grades that we've gotten from the teams. And then we'll sit down and we'll kind of talk them through the economics of the NFL and the economics of the NFL draft. You'll hear a lot of people talk about, you know, if you're a first round pick, you should really consider leaving. But if you're not, you probably should stay. And one of the biggest reasons why we try to make sure we have the data to show the kids and their families is that in the first round of the NFL draft, when you see a contract, you know, a player sign, whatever, the millions of dollars in the first round, they're going to make that money because first round money is essentially 100% guaranteed. as you start going down rounds, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh, that guaranteed money dramatically shrinks. And I don't have it in front of me, but you get down to a sixth, seventh round pick, you may only have 5-10% of your money that's guaranteed. So the friends and family may see a $4 to $6 million contract, but it may only be $75,000 to $200,000 in actually guaranteed money. So what ends up happening is you get picked in the fifth or sixth round and you're in that range, maybe a little bit more in guaranteed money. If you're not a player that they want to keep on their team, they can cut you because they don't have that money invested in you. They can replace it. I always say it's a salary cap league. So if they've only got $200,000 invested in you as far as guaranteed money, that's all they're losing that they can spend on somebody else. If they've got $15 million invested in you that's guaranteed, you're not getting cut. You're going to, first of all, it's guaranteed, so you're getting it. But secondly, if your contract is, let's say, a second round pick, maybe you're making, you know, $8 to $12 million maybe. And if half of that is guaranteed, the other half of that, you're probably going to make, because they're going to give you the chance to earn it. Because if they cut you, they lose all that guaranteed money. Whereas at the back end of the draft, if you're not good enough to make their team, you're going to, and that's not just that first year, it's every single year. And in some ways it's week to week. You're on a week to week contract at that point. If you get drafted in the sixth round and you've got $150,000 in guaranteed money, after that $150,000, you're on a week to week. You got a 4-year deal, but it's a 4-year deal for the team. It's a week to week deal for you on whether or not you can get cut and then lose all the rest of that $4 to $6 million that you think you were going to earn.
That's one of the things that I always have thought of with the NIL and now the ability for the schools to compensate the players is one of the good things, because I think there's a lot of players in years past who made uninformed decisions, I'll call it, and they're left out in the cold. You come back to school, that's guaranteed money and probably in a place that you're comfortable with. But also in talking now about the contracts in the NFL, it reminds me, we talked about this a little bit earlier, you know, tell me about the contracts that will now happen with a player. Let's say I'm a player now coming up in the class of 26, where I can, you know, make that commitment in December. How does that work? Am I offered a 4-year contract, a 3-year contract? What's guaranteed? How is that contract going to work, Andy?
Yeah, it still varies a little bit. Schools have some autonomy there in terms of how they structure it, in terms of length of contract. What we're seeing right now is the majority across the country are still 1-year contracts. There are some situations where some schools have chosen to go with longer deals. There's pros and cons on both sides, to be honest with you, when it comes to longer deals. I think that more often than not, you're going to see 1-year deals, particularly as we get going into this. As we get further into it, as we start to realize and understand more fully what the rules are and how things will apply, I could see more longer term, or at least somewhat longer term deals. But for right now, mostly 1-year deals. And the players will essentially sign a contract with the school, and the school will agree to pay them a certain amount of money over whatever the course of time is, and whatever the periods of time are. And they'll be, schools will be bound to those numbers. And it's for the rights to use the player's name, image, and likeness.
So now, if you're dealing with those contracts, and I know it'll be different at least a little bit by each school, but are there going to be different parameters coming in? Things like to qualify for some of this money, you have to commit to playing in any bowl game. Things like, I believe there was the player, was it in Wisconsin, who left for Miami, I believe, and, you know, the Wisconsin sued him for breach of contract or something. So how are those logistics going to work? And I'm sure it'll be a little different school to school.
Yeah, it'll be different school to school, and it will evolve. I think what we will all find is we'll all find scenarios where we'll learn from other schools, in the sense of what worked, what were they able to uphold, what weren't they able to uphold. And you have to have the negotiation. It's two-sided. You know, it's what do we want as a school to do, and how do we want the contract to play out? And then there's also the scenario of what does, you know, the player and their agent, what are they willing to do? And so you've got to come to common terms there. And there's, you know, right now everything is still on the table. What we've tried to do is have some general kind of standards, and this is how we're doing it across the board with all of our players. Agents seem to prefer that, hey, that, you know, one person's not getting a special treatment. So we've tried to do that as much as we can. We've worked with agents as well to try and figure out, you know, hey, what do you think is acceptable? What is fair? We're not trying to get it over on kids. We want to make sure that we're in a situation where we're competitive and we're fair, and we're protecting ourselves to a degree, but also that the player is being protected as well.
Will, that you talked that now they'll be more likely in 1 year format. And I'm comparing this now to professional sports. 1 year contracts seem great. It gives both sides freedom after 1 year. The problem is after 1 year, you might lose that very good player. So will there be that situation like it is in professional sports? We'll sign this guy to a multi-year contract because we want to lock him in for multiple years, that he won't hit the transfer portal. Is that how it'll work?
I think that is a possibility for sure. I do think that we're going to have to see how litigation happens coming through this, in the sense that to this point, deals that have been with collectives that were longer term deals don't seem to have been necessarily upheld. And so until we start to see that, hey, you can have a longer term deal that would actually lock somebody into place, we don't know that yet. And we have to wait and see how that plays out. These are not employment contracts. And I think that's a big piece of this in terms of trying to figure out what does it actually mean in terms of what aspects of the contract are binding and what aspects would a player be able to get out of if they chose to.
Well, you mentioned that employment contract, and I suspect we can do an entire show on, are players employees? Are they going to be employees? And does that mean collective bargaining agreement?
I think that it's a very real possibility that collective bargaining could be the next step. I don't have any inside information on that. But I think that, you know, the house settlement is a step in a direction of hopefully, you know, putting the past behind us in terms of the back damages, as far as the NCAA and college sports in general, so that there's not just, you know, never ending litigation on the backside of things. And then, hopefully, a step forward in terms of what is the next phase. You know, the house settlement does have parameters for the next 10 years. I do think there will probably be some litigation that we'll have to figure out what that looks like. And as that happens, could there be collective bargaining? That is probably the way where we get to the place where contracts are, you know, most easily upheld, and both sides can feel like, hopefully, they got a voice in the decision-making process. But for right now, we're under the house settlement, and we'll function that way. And I think that this will be a step forward. I think there's probably still more steps to come, but we'll see what those look like.
Okay, and I'm only giving you a minute before our next break, but how would that look like? I'm trying to picture collective bargaining from the player side. Would it be different by conference? Would this be across the whole spectrum of college football or all of college sports? How do they even get themselves organized into a group?
If we go down that path, there will be some challenges to all the things you just said. Is it all of college sports? Is it football is separate from others? We don't know. We will find out. Obviously, there's a lot of student athletes that would have to come together as a group to be able to do this. I know there's different groups that are, you know, trying to do it, and maybe someone will be able to pull it off, and maybe we'll be able to get to that place, or maybe the house settlement will end up, you know, being all that we need. We will find out. I think we have to stay on our toes and be able to adapt with whatever the change is.
I feel like that collective bargaining has to happen somehow. I'm just not sure how it could come about. I think the logistics of it are very complicated. All right, we still got multiple things to talk about out of the House settlement. We'll do that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four, brought to you by Happy Valley United. I'm with Mike Villagrana from Happy Valley United, Andy Frank, general manager of Penn State football. Guys, we wrapped up quarter number three talking about the idea of collective bargaining with Andy Frank. And Mike, I know you had a question about that.
Yeah, Andy, how long do you think the back and forth is going to go between the courts and the NCAA and these Power Four conferences? And how long, when do we get to a place where we're actually in a good place? We don't have to worry about something changing every day.
Yeah, I think things will always change. That's always been college sports. But I would say over the next 2 to 3 years, we'll see a lot of change. We'll see either the House settlement being upheld in every, you know, step of the way, or we'll find the areas where it's, you know, we got to kind of divert and change. I think the collective bargaining conversation will continue. My best guess is we're in the 2 to 3 year range. We'll start having clear direction based on, you know, litigation and collective bargaining conversations, whatever direction we end up going. I don't think we'll be finalized with it by 2 to 3 years, but I think we'll start to have a feel of where we're going.
I don't know if it's the place for either one of you to say it, but I can. I think that's where college football has to get to, or college sports in general, and we'll all be better off if it gets there. I did want, it links me to another question with all this. And doing this job and hearing from our listeners, one of the things I keep hearing about is, besides this is all the ruination of college football, it's not the same. It's never going to be the same. It's always going to change. But one of the issues they say is we're going to lose parity. We never had parity. You know, there were always these dynasties. But if anything, I think over these last couple years, we don't have just those two or three teams who are dominating the sport. I legitimately feel like there's 8 to 10 teams who could win the national championship this year, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, there is parity. I don't think we'll ever get to the place where we have pure parity across college football. And I'll be honest, I don't think we necessarily want that. I think the NFL is a league where they have 32 teams. You do want some version of parity. They have a draft. And so that changes things a little bit. It allows teams to kind of, if you were the worst team, you have the first pick, things along those lines. We, I think, more than likely will always have recruiting, and we'll always be in a scenario where the players will pick us. And so that will eliminate some of the parity. I think that at the end of the day, yes, we want to have a stable environment. So to Mike's point, things aren't changing every, you know, 2 weeks, and we're always kind of changing things. But we want to have access for all, for teams to be able to make their way up and down the food chain, if you will. But you still, at the end of the year, you want to see heavyweight fights. You want to see teams with the best players playing in the playoffs, and kind of the best teams should be playing the best teams. And you want to see those great players. We don't, like, the NFL has the best players. That's just the way it is. And it probably will be for, you know, as long as we're around watching the sport. And so, you know, we've got a younger group of players that are eventually going to be in the NFL. I don't know if we want them all consolidated to 3 or 4 teams, but 10, 15, and then other teams that can be competitive as well, I think is a positive thing. Our new world is going to make it so the talent does disperse some. It's going to be harder to, you know, coalesce all the talent in just a few places. But I still think at the end of the day, you're hopefully going to have, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, whatever it may be, of the teams at the end of each year that are the best teams to fight it out for the championship.
Tell me how, like with Penn State, and we've talked about this off the air, I don't think that Penn State necessarily offers the highest salary to these players. Like we've seen some of those numbers and some of them turned into horror stories, you know, $8 million to come to Florida. And then it turns into a lawsuit and on and on and on and those things. Mike, leading up to my question is, how do you at Penn State say to a player, look, here's a value beyond just the money. Yes, you'll get compensated, but we have something more going on here. And I think some of the evidence of it is still year after year, very few players leave Penn State to the transfer portal. Very few come in the transfer portal. There seems to be a culture that – how did you develop that culture, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of work goes into it, but really it's being authentic to who we are, who Coach Franklin, you know, wants the organization to be. We're about kind of a holistic approach. We're, you know, Coach is very adamant that if you want to be successful in football, you want to be successful in school, you want to be successful, you know, in areas outside of football and school, this is going to be a great place for kids that want to do that. And we're going to pour our hearts into making that happen for every, you know, kid that comes here. If you just want to be good at one thing, if it's just want to be good at academics, or you just want to be good at football, we may not be the right place for you. We're looking for, you know, kind of that total package of someone who wants to be good at everything. And as a result, that comes with, you know, creating a culture that you bring those people into your organization. When it comes to, you know, the top dollar, the reality is no one can pay top dollar for every player because no one has that budget. Even the schools that have the very biggest budgets, you have to have players that are willing to buy into what you're about more than just it being a paycheck. Because if you don't, you can't keep up with it. It's just not possible because there's other schools who also have, you know, money to spend. And so we haven't been flamboyant with the offers. I think that's also some of it. You know, we've got players making good amount of money. Some schools are probably more in the forefront of trying to flaunt the offers in some ways, if you will. I don't think that's not kind of the meat and potatoes, you know, that we've always been. We've been about, you know, everything, the whole package. And as a result, our guys, I do think they feel like they're being fairly taken care of, and that as they earn their way on the field, that they're going to continue to be fairly taken care of. And I think that's what's been successful for us. If a kid picks Penn State or anywhere else because you were the highest bidder, does that really play out in the long run as the best, you know, reason? We want guys that want to be here for all of the reasons, and financially should be part of it, but it shouldn't be the only part of it. And if it is the only part of it, ultimately they're probably not going to fit our culture anyhow and probably not be as successful as we'd want them to be here.
Now, you mentioned James Franklin in that answer. Now, I'm going to ask this question to both of you, and I'll ask you to answer it first, Mike. You were at Penn State. You chose to come back into the James Franklin world. Andy, you've been with James Franklin since the start here at Penn State for many years. Mike, what is it about James Franklin working in the program with him? Why is that so important?
He's the epitome of a leader. He's consistent. It's funny coming back and sitting in a staff meeting with Coach Franklin and the demand that he demands in that room. The places that I've been, nobody operates the program like he does. He's consistent. He's genuine. He cares about everybody, but he's very demanding. It's like, you know, fourth and one every day. You know, like Andy said, there's probably you go in one day thinking you're going to have one thing, but it's just always something new. You're always trying to be in the front edge of everything. But it's just nobody. I told Andy after the first day being here, man, I wish I had never left. You know, but it was good. It was good to experience some other things. But Coach Franklin is, it's crazy. I can't believe everything that he does in a day, and every single day. You know, it's just jam packed what he has on his plate.
And how about you, Andy? I'm sure there's been opportunities for you along the way. You've been here from the beginning with James Franklin.
Yeah, I think Mike hit on a bunch of it. You know, the standard is really high, and I think I enjoy that. I think the other thing for me, as much as anything else, is I believe in a lot of the same things that Coach believes in. So from a culture standpoint of, you know, what we're doing for hopefully the young men that come through the program, what we're doing hopefully for the community, those are things that I believe in. And that makes you want to work for somebody who's hasn't lost perspective on what most of us got into college football for. We all loved football. We all loved what football did for us growing up. And I still feel like we have that through all the changes in college football, through compensating players, through the, you know, how high the stakes are now compared to what they maybe were as you were making your way up. Through all of that, at the core of what Coach is about, it's about developing young men and creating an environment that they can, you know, reach their dreams and be successful and leave Penn State as the people that their parents wanted them to grow and mature into in college. I think that's, you know, for me, why I'm still here, because I believe in those things. And even going back to, you know, the highest bidder question with NIL, we don't do that because if that's what you value as the most important thing, that's not kind of where I'm at. It's kind of the whole picture. We want to be competitive and we want to all of those things, but we want the kid to develop and grow and mature and feel like, you know, 15, 20 years from now, they're like, I picked Penn State for all the right reasons, and I'm living a life now that maybe I was a couple dollars short back when I was 19 years old, but now I'm living the life that always wanted to live.
All right, and about the 30 seconds we have left, I could tell you, Andy, the listeners, the Penn State fan base, they are really excited about the expectation level for this year's team. I know every year you're going want to win the national championship. There's a different feel among the fans. Is there a different feel in the Lash building also for this season?
We're pretty consistent here. For us, it's you know, come in and work. And we've worked for a long time to get to a place where we have the roster that we have coming back. We acknowledge that we do feel like we've got a really good team, but there's going to be a lot more work that goes into becoming the team that we want to be for this season. We are excited for it. We do have high expectations, but that's always going to be the case for us. But it's about continuing to do the work. These are, I think sometimes people want it to be, you know, you pull one lever or you do one thing and that's like, that fixes everything or that puts you over the hump. No, we're just going to keep working. And that's kind of our mindset, and that's what we're going to do this year.
All right, very good. That's the last word. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Mike. And thank all of you for tuning in. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.